Hey, Albert, come from?
Okay.
My name is Rosemary Albert, and I come from the Chippewa of the Thames Reserve.
How old are you?
None of your business. But now you know.
Okay. She's on. Okay. First thing I'd like to know from you is what your work is here at Nanrin.
Well, my title, I guess, is administrative assistant, and I guess kind of hard to describe what I do, but it's like more or less I do all of the administrative work that has to be done around here, paperwork, reports, timesheets. I deal with the staff in that if they have a question about what direction they want to go in, or if they want to do certain things, then they'll come and they'll discuss it with me first. I stand in for the executive director when required. And what else?
How did you get into this line of work? What made you interested in this line of work?
Well, it started a long time ago, back in 1974. Up until that point, I had just been working in factories, and I quit my job because of problems, you know, with my family at home and stuff like that. And we were living in Detroit at the time, so we were in touch with the Indian Center. Well, I was always involved with them to some extent, though not a great deal. And they had this, what they call this Title IV education money, and they wanted to help people get their high school diplomas, so we went down there, both my husband and I, and took the tests to find out if we needed more education or not, and I got my high school diploma that way. And then they asked me, well, what do you want to do next? And of course I didn't know what I wanted to do, you know, because it's just, you know, like all of a sudden there's all kinds of things in front of you, you know, when you're given a choice like that, what do you want to do? So I chose stenography, and I took that course over there and graduated and went to work immediately for the Michigan State Department of Indian Affairs. And I really liked it there, and there was still enough involvement with the Friendship Center that I was continuously working and seeing Native people. And it's a little different over there because you don't have the same kinds of prejudices that you do here in the City of London. And it's not as obvious, I guess, you know, like, because there are all kinds of people there. And I think the bigger discrimination is with black people. So we decided, after our girls became teenagers, to come back here to the States because it was getting hard to keep them in school because of all the drugs and the rowdyism and stuff like that. So we came back here in 1977, and I went to work immediately for the band office on a Chippewa reserve. And I stayed there for 2.5 years. I just couldn't stand the politics anymore and got out of that too. And after that I worked for a non-Native organization, but it just seemed like there was just something that I was looking for that I just wasn't happy. And just about the time that they decided they were going to get rid of me, well, these people called me up here. I come in here only once, and when I was in here, I seen a job posting on a board, so I had sent my resume in, and they called me in for this position. So I came in, I was successful, and I've been here ever since. But, you know, like, that's, it's just, this is the kind of work that I want to do, you know, like, I'm not happy anyplace else.
Since you went back to school and you changed your lifestyle, how do you feel about it now? How do you feel about your, it must have been such a tremendous change.
Well, I didn't think so, like, in the beginning, you know, because the first position I had, well, it was for administrative assistant too, but it was different, and it was, to me, it was exciting, you know, like it didn't seem like such a tremendous change, and I looked forward to every day because it was always something different. And it's the same thing here, you know, like every day is different. And this period that we're coming into now is probably the slowest that we have all year round, is during July and August.
Is there much challenge to your work?
Oh, yeah. Enough to keep me interested.
What kinds of things do you do here that specific kinds of projects that you feel are a part of preserving uniquely Native culture?
Well, I guess one of the ways is by keeping the center open during the evening, it opened it up to like the Oneida language program and the Ojibwe language program. Boxing has always gone on here, that's not traditional or cultural in any way, but there are a few Native people in there. We do things like we haven't had in a long time, but we do have community feasts at the odd time, and I think too that workshops and conferences and even as far as going as far as say OFIFC workshops and board meetings and just to keeping and meeting of all the people, Indian people from all over, which happens at these things. And the National is coming up in July, and we'll be doing a lot of activities where that's concerned too, like a mini powwow, and there'll be a community feast, and then there'll be the regular stuff like a banquet and dance, you know.
That's outside of the job.
Yeah.
Outside of you doing your job at Mahon.
Well, that's part of it.
That's part of it?
Yeah, that's
Have
part
you
of
it. Ever get involved without being involved in Mahon? Let's say there was a project going on outside of NAM and it was a Native project. Would you go and get involved in it, or would you just let somebody else handle it?
If I was interested in it, I would, and I have. But it has to be something that interests me, because NAM takes a lot of my spare time already.
Do you benefit from being involved with the Native culture?
I do, yeah. In a way that probably in the way that I feel about everything, I guess, you know, like I know that I couldn't go traditional. I wouldn't be able to live that way.
How do you define traditional?
Well, just being involved with because I originally I'm an Oneida, just by being involved with the longhouse and practicing what their lifestyle. I know that I couldn't do that, but I'm interested enough that there are certain things that I will do and participate in.
Does your work here at NAMRN make it easier to hold on to that sense of being Native?
Well, for me it does, because out on a Chippewa reserve there is nothing at all, you know. And the Oneida, they have their longhouse and that, and the people have a choice there. But on a Chippewa side, they have nothing. So.
Why do you think there is? Like, why do you think it's not that?
I don't know. I don't know nothing about those people. I just live there.
That wasn't your home reserve when you were Oneida.
Yeah, I was born on, I was born in Oneida.
Do you still find, even though you're living on Chippewa Reserve, that your ties are stronger to the Oneida Reserve?
No.
No?
Actually, I don't feel ties to either place other than that Chippewa's home, you know. And like there's no real ties in the sense that there's no family there. And with Oneida, I guess you might say I've had too much conflict while growing up there that it doesn't bother me in the least to say that I'm from somewhere else and that I call someplace else home.
Have you ever you have lived away from Oneida from what I hear. Was it hard coming back to reserve life?
Not to me, because to me that's where I always wanted to be. And I would say that I benefited from it, you know, from living off, that I grew a great deal while I was away. But I think everybody is the same, that they want to go back someday. And it just happened for us sooner than it would have ordinarily because we had daughters.
Well, you were involved with the Arts Festival.
Yes.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Art Festival is an annual event. It takes place the first weekend of May every year. And what we do is we send out letters, I would say maybe around February, March, inviting artists to participate in the Art Festival. And this past year, we had sent out quite a few. I think we sent out about 50 invitations to find out if they wanted to come, but Native people being the way they are, we couldn't get a definite response from them. Last year we had too many people. This year a lot of them didn't show up even though they said they were coming. So it's kind of tough to know whether you're going to have enough people or if you're not, and at the same time you're kind of afraid to overbook as well. And we visit as many art shows as we can, you know, like through the year, to see and find out about artists and stuff like that, to see who we want to invite. And I don't know what else, you know, like up until the rest of it is just hard work putting it together. And
what do you see as the benefits to the Native and the non-Native community?
Well, for one thing, the art show is becoming well known now because we always have a good show, especially opening night. We send out a lot of invitations. I think it benefits the artists more than it would anyone else. We have a category for new artists, and we invite them to come out, and we don't select their work for them or anything. Like, we ask them to show us what kind of work they do, and we'll say whether we'll have it in the show or not. But usually, we don't turn any of them away. And one of the criteria for being invited back again is that they have to sell something, you know. That's not necessarily for new artists, but for the other artists, it is. You know, like if they don't sell anything, the first time, they might, if their work is good, they might be invited for a second year. But after that, if there's still no sales, then they're not invited back again.
Is there? When the prices are set, does Nameron, do they have to pay to be a part of the exhibit? Is there any percentage of their sales that go?
Yeah. Yes, we get a 20% commission on all of their sales. And that came down. Like last year it was 25%, this year it was 20%. And I think that like, we didn't really have any complaints about that. It was a good number.
And you need that for administrative costs?
Yes, uh-huh, yes.
Yeah, because what I had noticed was that I think some people, which makes sense to me,
mm-hmm.
had raised some of their prices, and I wanted to take that into account.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we had, like at the art show, it started out to be strictly a fine art show. And then over the years, taking surveys and that, people said that they wanted stuff that they could afford, like they wanted to see beadwork and other types of crafts. So that's why we have got a mixed medium out there now. And it's because of what people want. Because there are a lot of Native people who didn't come to the original shows and stuff like that because they just couldn't afford that kind of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you find it hard for the crafters? Like, for the beaders, they have a set price on their work, and if they're outselling all of Namrin, their beadwork price is at a level, at a stage where they're becoming known for their prices. So if they come to Namrin and they have to jack up their prices, do you feel that they're not having to sell as much?
I don't really know, because I don't think that all of them, like especially where the beadwork is concerned, I don't think all of them jack their prices up. They might maybe put another dollar or two on it, but not so high that it's out of reach. You know,
well,
what I mean?
I was just thinking of the baskets, where I knew some baskets that had originally sold for 20 or 25, which felt fair to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
They had to bring everything in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, the price was cheap enough to begin with, I thought.
Yeah, because I know that I thought the baskets were really reasonable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Besides working at Namrin and involving yourself in the community work, what type of work do you do at home? Like in bead work or?
Well, I don't really do very much, but I can make ribbon shirts, and I do make little children's outfits because I have granddaughters and they like to dance, and so I do make their little outfits for them. But other than that, just sewing, you know, I'm not into anything heavy.
From your experience, do you find that the Native beadwork or craft work is dying out?
I don't think so. Like, I don't know if there's very many on our reserve, but like, I know that my daughters do it. All of them can do it. They don't all, but two of them will do it. My one daughter was in the art show, and the other one, she just does it for herself, for her own pleasure. But they all can, and they learned that by attending what we called Saturday School when we were in the States, which was a program for Native people. And we just called it Saturday School, and that's where they learned to do that.
Do you feel that, like, if the beadwork was to die out, do you feel that the Native culture itself would end up dying out? If it came down to the point where it was beadwork or a white society, a dominant white society, then would you feel that the Native people are, you know, they're not going back to their heritage, they're not trying to learn their language or their traditional ways, or how would you feel about that?
Well, I don't think that'll happen myself, because even on the reserve now, they're teaching beadwork, and they're teaching the language in the schools, and beadwork goes on in the school. The kids are learning to do that kind of stuff in school. Plus they can have extra, you know, like classes after school or whatever to participate in that kind of thing too. And I think that as long as the parents are involved, that the kids will be. And I really don't think that that'll happen.
Do you think that women have, Native women have any kind of special role in helping to preserve culture?
Probably do.
Thinking in your own family.
Yeah, because I have to say it's the difference there, because like I was always interested in it, and I think it's because, like I say, I came from Oneida and the longhouses there, and even though I didn't fully participate in it, I knew what it was about, and their father, on the other hand, had nothing to do with it whatsoever and has no interest in it even now, you know, like I would say that probably in most cases it's like that the women would probably have more to do with it than fathers would. And I know that like for the Ojibwe language classes that we have here, that it is women that come out from there. And there are, I don't know of any men participating.
There was a few that helped me.
Yeah.
And there was my husband, and maybe. Actually, there was just my husband and another Englander, and all the rest were women.
Yeah.
And the majority of them were white women and one white man.
But I guess I'm wondering if the women seem to be participating and showing more interest. What do you think there is about that? Why is it more important to the women, or why are they taking a more active role in making sure that some of these more traditional parts of the culture are maintained?
I really don't know. Like I can't even really say why I do it. You know, I can't even really say why I'm so interested in it. You know. I just don't know. Maybe it's because, for the most part, men are more concerned with work and their work is not necessarily on a reserve, or women can be involved right there on a reserve if they want to be. And I really don't know.
Are there any other programs that you think have been particularly successful and useful to the community this year?
You mean coming out of the center here?
Yeah, out of the center.
And do you mean special projects or
mm-hmm. you know, special or ongoing things?
Yeah, because like the center has regular programs such as the criminal court workers, Native criminal court workers, and a family court worker, and we have a community liaison. She's a referral worker. And I think that all of those things are important. We have a community development worker who supposedly is working on developing programs that the community would like to see. And then we have all our special projects, like the Ladies Auxiliary. They have money to do workshops. They've already done a couple, and they got one more yet to do.
What kinds of workshops have they done this year?
The first one.